Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Little White Lies awards the extraordinary documentary For Sama 5 stars, calling it one of 2019's most essential films. For Sama offers a unique female perspective on the conflict in Syria, while also underlining the vital role that journalism plays in bringing these horrors to light, as well as the moments of joy that can be found among the ruins. A baby girl, Sama, smiles and giggles as bombs rain down from above. Her mother, Waad Al-Khatib, takes on the task of filming the devastation as a memento for her daughter and the wider world. Nationwide previews of For Sama have already begun, and they include Q&As with its co-directors Waad Al-Khatib and Edward Watts.
Welcome to A Truth in Movies Venice Film Festival special. This episode, Joaquin Phoenix plays the Clown Prince of Gotham in The Joker. Steven Soderbergh socks it to the fat cats in The Laundromat. Roy Anderson's beautiful bittersweet treatise on humanity about endlessness. And it's the battle of the superhunks in David Michaud's The King, all here on A Truth in Movies Venice Film Festival special.
Hey there, Truth and Movers. We're here at the Venice Film Festival 2019. I'm here with my friend and colleague, Christina Newland.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about some movies we've seen. It's the final Wednesday of the festival. Christina is going to be heading off today and I'm heading off tomorrow. We've seen plenty already, some good, some great, some not so good. And we're going to sort of talk about some of the highlights with you today. We're sat out on the sort of main festival campus. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. And people are coming out for the first screenings of the day. We're actually sat in front of one of the big outdoor screening rooms. So let's get down to business and talking about the movies. First up, I think we should address the problem, that is The Joker by Todd Phillips, which was probably the most sort of ritzy gala here at the festival. Certainly one of the most talked about films, one of the most divisive. The film sees Joaquin Phoenix playing a character who initially seems very similar to the kind of comic book archetype of the Joker, and the film kind of threads him into the world of the sort of DC universe, the Batman universe, I guess, and pitched as a very different type of comic book movie. Do you think that's a fair description?
Yeah, I do. I know that we profoundly disagree on this movie. I think that it's no accident that Arthur Fleck is called Arthur Fleck, because when you look at the ways in which it's influenced by Taxi Driver and the influence for that, which was a bit of an unhinged guy called Arthur Bremer Jr., who enacted some vigilante violence, attempted assassinations. This is very much in the mold of Taxi Driver, maybe even too much so. But having said that, it definitely is something new, I think.
You say Taxi Driver, but one of the other comparison pieces that a lot of people have been talking about this film, in fact, most reviews I've read cite Taxi Driver, but also King of Comedy, and there is a sort of sense that Todd Phillips has been watching a lot of Martin Scorsese. And do you feel that this is maybe his attempt at something like a gritty 70s Scorsese film?
I think that any movie suffers by comparison to those ones. And certainly there have been so many filmmakers who have tried and failed to imitate Scorsese. So, you know, that is a pitfall to be aware of. But I also think that this does something interesting, this idea of this really maladjusted, I'm going to go ahead and say it, incel type of character. It asks of us to sympathize with him to some extent, to understand the conditions that have led to his behavior. including social welfare being cut in the city of Gotham and him not being able to get access to his psych meds. And I think that's a kind of interesting idea that is used in Scorsese a lot in terms of, you know, when you look at the ends of Taxi Driver and King of Comedy, you see these very, very maladjusted men who, in their own minds, have reached some level of success. And I think this is almost like a corollary to that.
One of the things I like about Taxi Driver is that Travis Bickle in that film is very... he has his own very strange and unique definition of what society is and what things are failing him. And the sort of motif in the film is that he is seeing the sort of scum of the streets in the back of his taxi. And he's sort of seeing these quite random examples of degradation and the things that are causing him to snap. Whereas I think in The Joker, the idea of society is much broader. It's about the police and hospitals and healthcare and neighbours and buildings and town planning and mayors and corruption and government. And for me, it almost ticks off all those sort of boxes to sort of show how this society is failing Arthur Fleck, who is played in the film by Joaquin Phoenix in a kind of, if we're sort of doing comparisons, Joaquin Phoenix's performance harks back to his work with Paul Thomas Anderson, and the anxieties of the master and the sort of weird, wacky, unhingedness of his role in Inherent Vice. Did Joaquin's performance work for you?
It's interesting because when you read some of the first reviews out of Venice, people seem to be quite torn on whether it's the worst he's ever been or the best he's ever been. And I can understand why in that it's a very big performance. He has to commit to doing this maniacal laughter, which is so kind of, you know, the legendary characteristic of this comic book character, manages to kind of make what on paper doesn't seem very convincing. It, like a condition a little bit like Tourette's syndrome, and it's like it's being forced out of him, like it's ripped out of him. And the physicality of it, like he really is kind of extremely thin. He looks ill, and he looks kind of sunken. Everything about him is despairing and sad looking, and I think it's an incredible performance. And I think because he's so thrilling and because you're kind of unsure of what he's actually going to do next, and he kind of zigs when you expect him to zag, that kind of pins it all together for me, I think.
I think that's maybe the key splitting point between us, is that I felt watching the film, I kind of knew exactly where he was going to go next. This kind of idea of spontaneity and him being this sort of rogue element in the film, someone who could turn on a dime and do something really nasty, it just wasn't there for me. Everything felt very sort of teed up and foreshadowed, and you always knew the extent of how bad he was going to be, or the point he was going to flip, or how far he was going to take an obsession. And it felt just very contrived in its plotting, and a lot of the characters were very cliched versions of like people who have a single trait and they are kind of punished for a very sort of simple, obvious, almost binary reason. I guess the film has caused a lot of outrage in terms of this idea of, will people copy what he's doing or take his politics and apply it to their own lives? I guess it's this bigger question of, can movies have a literal effect on the viewer and change minds and, worst case scenario, cause violence? And I felt that all the people Arthur Fleck kills in the film, you're almost told that they deserve it. These kind of petty transgressions against him, it's almost saying, yeah, it was okay that he did this and it was all for the cause of a bigger revolution. But yes, it's a debate that I'm sure will rage on.
I mean, the question of whether movies can cause social harm or encourage violence. There have been a small handful of movies, I think, throughout history that have done that, probably like Birth of a Nation being the most, you know, sort of notorious. But we just can't hold movies responsible to that extent, to what, you know, people are going to do or how they're going to react. And the way, you know, things are at the moment, I think that, you know, we're in volatile times and it's possible that somebody may look at this film and go apeshit, but if it wasn't this film, would it be another film? You know, it's kind of straying into the territory of moral guardianship, and it's not something that I'm really interested in. Also, I think that when a film is, of course we disagree on this, but I think the film is really effective, and when a film is effective, then we're kind of calling it morally irresponsible because it's successful at what it's doing, because it's going to convince people of something or another, is sort of...
contradiction.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be talking about Joker for a long, long time. It's coming out in cinemas soon, and I believe it's going to be on one of our regular editions, so we'll get to drill deeper then. But let's move on to our next film, Steven Soderbergh's Laundromat. So The Laundromat is the new film by Steven Soderbergh, his second in 2019, following High Flying Bird from earlier this year. It's another Netflix film. It's his take on the Panama Papers, which was a 2015 info dump of clients of a Panamanian law/accounting firm who were essentially using their services to avoid paying lots of tax and in the process making lots of money. It's almost like a bit of a sketch piece. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it sets itself up with the two founders of, I think it's called Mossack Fonseca, this Panamanian firm, played by Antonio Banderas and Gary Oldman. And they use kind of direct address to lead the viewer through the wider story of their kind of fall from grace, so to speak, throughout various people that this thing is affected by and various people who've made money from it. And it's framed as, I think it's five secrets. So it's like secret number one, and it explains what a shell company is. So it's all very kind of meta and all very kind of geared towards, in a lightly humorous way at times, helping the viewer to understand these complex financial things and the way that offshore companies work and avoid taxes.
And you have a host of stars. Soderbergh tends to be able to like draw in the big stars. So you've got Meryl Streep as a kind of doddery Midwestern retiree who is on a pleasure barge with her husband and it is tipped over and a lot of the people on the boat die. And her kind of search for restitution is almost like her entering down the rabbit hole of this world of shell companies and fake companies and people just sat in a little room on a tax haven somewhere, just answering a phone and stamping pieces of paper. There's no sense that she is the person who uncovers it. It's more of a kind of, we're sort of following her as the sort of simple working class woman who is trying to get her head around this super complex. It's not quite fraud, but it feels like it's close to fraud. The tone of the film is a strange one, I thought. How would you describe the tone?
Sort of pithy and very kind of punchy and direct. It wants you to know very clearly how it feels and how you should feel about this. Right up into the conclusion where it really kind of goes like, what are you going to do about this? Kind of, you know, very polemical, I guess.
Did the film work for you?
Yeah, I liked it. I did enjoy it. I thought it was really interesting. As a film person, could have no claim to really understanding what Panama Papers were or what the repercussions of it were. So it was interesting in that respect. And I thought Meryl Streep's performance was, particularly some of the interesting stuff she does towards the conclusion was, I don't want to give anything away. It's really good.
She kind of crops up in various ways in the film. She plays another character as well. I don't think that's a spoiler to say that, is there? I think Soderbergh has quite an abiding interest in like capital flow, money, economics. And I think looking back at his other films, even something like his Ocean's 11 film, he does have that interest in like where the money is and how you get it, where people put it and keep it. And he's an amazing, I guess, movie insider when it comes to talking about the sort of secrets of the film industry as well and film funding. His work with Netflix now, he's making these films really quickly and quite cheaply, and you know, he really knows the economics of film. And it feels quite apt that he's made this film, even though for me it's maybe one of his slightly lesser work.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Okay, up next, we have a film that I believe both of us are rather fond of. It's by the Swede Roy Andersson, and it is called About Endlessness.
Can I pass the buck to you to describe this one?
It's quite a task. It's basically this mosaic of God knows how many stories about a huge variety of people across time and space. Some of them are very incidental little things, sort of banal situations of a woman pushing a pram and her high heel breaks or something like that. And then others are set in a Nazi bunker or an overhead shot of a ruined city with a kind of spectral, phantom-like couple floating over the cityscape. So you really have this huge variety of subjects. They get a larger sense what connects all those little things together is this kind of profound questioning of God and godlessness and what makes life worth living, and touches on war and family and male aggression even. It's extremely hard to describe, I'm finding, as I'm talking about this.
I totally agree. It's a toughie. If anyone's seen any films by Roy Anderson, that will give you a bit of a sort of leg up into what it is he's doing. He sort of straddles the world between like a sketch comic and a conceptual artist, and his films don't have a narrative or story. Sometimes he has recurring sketches, as you would have in a sketch comedy. You'd have a character who recurs. In this one, you have a man who has a dream about being crucified, and then later it's revealed that he's a priest who's lost his faith, and he is trying to come to terms with that in various different ways. One of the things about the film is, and Roy Anderson in general, is that he's known to be a kind of comic filmmaker, and his previous films like A Pigeon Sat on a Branch, Reflecting Existence, and You the Living, and Songs from the Second Floor always had a kind of comic aspect to them, where there was a scene and the scene ended with a punchline. But I think what he's done here is he's really kind of concentrating what he does into something very, very pure and very beautiful and moving. It's easily his most moving film. He's kind of removed the punchline aspect, so the setup ends up being the focus and the thing, and sometimes that in itself is much more moving. One of the sketches in here that I particularly adored was one in which a couple are in a bar and a waiter pours some champagne, and the woman sips the champagne and she's clearly loving the champagne, and then it ends and it's just like this vision of pure pleasure. And you also have, there's another sequence as well in which it takes place outside a little cafe, and three young women just start dancing to the music playing in the cafe, and that's it. And it's just really beautiful, happy times, and very moving. And it has this kind of almost link to a lot of classical cinema, I think, in the way that it just tries to leech off this idea of what is a pleasurable thing to look at and hear and experience. So do you think this could be in with a chance for the big one, the big prize here?
I would like to think so, but Roy Anderson did win the Golden Lion the other year for A Pigeon Sat on a Branch, so I don't know. I don't know if they'd give it to him again. It'd be nice.
I'd kind of like him to get it for this one as well. I mean, it's definitely one of my highlights this festival, along with James Gray's Ad Astra, which we talked about in the last episode. Okay, let's move on finally to a film that I'm sure all of our listeners are going to be interested in, which is The King by David Michaud. As I said at the top, it's the Battle of the Superhunks, in that in the red corner we have Timmy Chalamet as Prince Hal, 15th century monarch, with an attractive East London hipster bowl cut. And then in the blue corner, we have the Dauphin of France, played by Robert Pattinson, with possibly the greatest funny French accent in the history of cinema, and a kind of almost Kurt Cobain-ish bleach blonde bob. Do you think that's a fair summing up of the film?
Well, I'm just going to go right in here and say this is a film that's really easy to make fun of. I mean, I happen to think it's slightly aware of the fact that it can present as quite silly when you've got this mannered 15th century language. But I think that it succeeds on a lot of levels. I love that the cast is so young. I read something where David Michaud said, you know, people died really young in medieval times. We imagine kings as being these kind of older, stately men. But really, King Henry V died when he was like 35 or something. So, you know, when you're looking at these guys, they are just like these young, impulsive guys in charge of these vast armies. And the other thing that I love about it is how tactile it is. I think the production design of it, the costumes, it looks kind of naturalistic and dirty and real. And the set piece of the film is the Battle of Agincourt.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably one of my favorite parts. I guess the narrative kind of hinges on it, kind of builds up to it. And it's all kind of set in this muddy field. It's been a rainy night, and the English are really outnumbered by the Dauphin's army, and they manage to use the mud to their tactical advantage. Two men are grappling on the ground, and you can't really tell them apart or see anything aside from mud. People drowning in it and bleeding in it, and it's just got this really awful tactile feel to it.
I was watching this and rethinking back to the days of my history degree and studying Agincourt and the primary sources and talking about all the battle tactics there. I actually think I wrote an essay on longbows versus the French crossbows and why the longbows were so much better because you had the range. And it kind of goes into some of that those battle tactic details. But for me, I got to say, I thought Chalamet was a bit of a bust as a regent. His performance just didn't work for me. It felt very kind of showy, and maybe that he was trying a little bit too hard, maybe sort of focused too heavily on maintaining his slightly posh English accent. And I totally get you with the aesthetic side, and I think the battle scene is interesting, and certainly that kind of mass huddle they get into where it's just there's a sort of overhead shot where it's where the frame is completely filled with bodies. But yeah, it just takes a long time to get there, and there's a lot of going through the sort of historical epic cliches as well, such as the big battle speech and the treacherous side players and the arguments against the evil cleric. And you know, it's I think that's the thing that maybe didn't do it for me, is that I wish I'd seen the film that Robert Pattinson was in or thought he was in, rather than the film that Timothée Chalamet thought he was in, which is the film that David Michaud has tried to make, which is a quite a sort of po-faced, serious historical battle film. I think you were saying yesterday that you maybe saw a bit more humour in the whole thing.
Yeah, I think there are moments. There's a sort of part where the cleric that you mention is talking at length about some quite dull political matter, and Chalamet cuts him off. I can't remember what the line is, but cuts him off in quite a contemporary way, as if to say, I'm bored. And kind of, in a way, it's sort of a nod and wink to the audience, because going through the procedural internal politics of the court is a little bit dull. And definitely the film picks up momentum in its second half, for sure. But yeah, in terms of the humor, also, I mean, the Pattinson performance is almost camp. It's right that it just seemed like he's been teleported in from a different film.
Someone mentioned Klaus Kinski, which is not far off. His accent is like Pepe Le Pew has been mentioned, and allo, allo. These kind of funny French accents signifies through modern contemporary culture. He's kind of bringing those to the table, and you know, all power to him, I think. Right, I think the lines are forming for our next movie, your final movie of the festival, in fact, because you're heading off today. So I just want to say, Christina, thanks very much for having us, and this has been a 7Digital production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.